Blog Talk Radio.
Souls awake and your deathbed is waiting, huh? No time for contemplating, commit to box with Satan. Spar with the devil, I'm hard with the metal, huh? Watch the smoke settle, you see a riot rebel. A militant mind, my vision's divine. The world has seen enough and had enough, and it's past time. It's crunch time, get your hard hat, it's lunch time. Too much rip going on, the punchline. I give it to him, straight up and raw. You got to hear some and see some that you never saw. Walk with the word, the talk is superb. I'm about to shatter the faith of the image you serve. Yeah, toting scripture, I focus the picture. I overstand the plan, that means I over-deliver. I overstand the plan and all the ramifications. The verse about the curse, watch the rebirth of a nation. I make a wrong move, they got a cell for me waiting. I make the right move, might be the same situation. I put you on the game, but you be blinded by hating. I pray you seek the truth so you can find it and make it. I hope you seek the truth and don't reject it, but take it. They've been living out a lie, now it's time that they face it.
Father, bless me in the trenches as I battle these demons. In a land full of heathens, going to war with the creepers. The adversary wants us buried for the scripture we speak. Deliver, die, the truth will rise through those souls that seek it. The church is full of snakes and the preacher the main one. Ain't no souls getting saved, just some business getting done. The sacred name has been forsaken, words drug through the mud. A cursed lineage and nation shitting Hebrew blood. It led me down the path of sin, so I have no option but to oppose the beast with a set apart doctrine. When you're bringing forth truth, then the world hates your presence, cause the message shatters faith in the wake of the lesson. We done came full circle, Babylonian rule. You lack knowledge of the game, then you're destined to lose. The revelation is real, and it's not a pretty scene. You better know the ins and outs before you choose your team. In a world full of lies, truth is stranger than fiction, caught in webs of deception, living Satan's depiction. The adversary keeps his hands in the minds of man to create blind faith in his falsified plan. Understand who I am, true Hebrew man, true Israelite descendant, your seed of Abraham. When the time comes for battle, the word is the blueprint. Through the set apart scripture, outcome is evident. The murky element in this life contains danger, but once the fog is lifted, the system can't tame you. Call it total recall or unplug from the matrix. Some righteous warriors ever since the truth saved us. Teachings of the prophets, take my stance and I hold it. With my eyes locked on Yah, never shifting my focus. Dropping 16 deep as the Dead Sea scrolls, ripping holes through the schemes and the lies we were told.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, friends and enemies. I'm your host, Dawid Yaakov Maccabeus. You are listening to Signs and Wonders, the broadcast that came right on time. Today's date is October 8th, 2011. Happy Shabbat, happy Sabbath day, day of rest, and may Ayah, our Father, bless and keep you. Before I begin, I'm going to open up in a word of prayer. And wait for the chat room and the call-in, people to call in. Heavenly Father, before I begin, I would like to send a message to you, Father, Ayah, and give credit to where credit is due. Father Ayah, I thank you for giving me the opportunity once again to speak to your children. I ask that you bind and bound any demonic forces that try to hinder this message. Bind and bound the principalities in high places that do not want this message out today, O Father. Heavenly Father, thank you for the ability to research your word. I thank you for the ability to put precept upon precept, line upon line, here little, there little. Thank you, O Father, for giving me this understanding. I pray that somebody out there hears this message today and is awakened and runs back to you, O Father. Heavenly Father, I pray this in the name of Yahushua's precious name. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Okay, I want to thank everybody so much for coming. This broadcast is very important, and I don't want to understate that. And the inspiration for doing this broadcast was because of a few films that I've been researching, and they're films on racism. You actually can watch those on my website, which is whoinet.org. And at whoinet.org, you can also download the files to the transcripts. Now, these are going to be one of those broadcasts that you're going to want to download later. And I've been working on the transcript to try to make sure that a lot of information is in there and you can cross-reference it. And I'm going to build a blog out of this one also. And this is going to be a three-part series, okay? We're going to go through the first part that's going to talk about beginning in the 1700s, 18th century. And then we're going to go to mid-century. And then we're going to go to recent times. Now, what I want to do with this is I'm going to show us how this thing called the Messiah, okay? What is the Black Messiah, okay? Now, this broadcast is entitled Rise of the Black Messiah / Know Your Enemy. I say this to bring your memory back to the workings of the FBI counterintelligence program of 1956 called COINTELPRO. Okay? So, what is COINTELPRO? Now, I know by now many of us have heard of this, but let's actually analyze what COINTELPRO is to get a deeper understanding on what it really, really was. Okay? So, what is COINTELPRO? And it reads, COINTELPRO is an acronym for counterintelligence program with a series of covert and other and often illegal projects conducted by the United States Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI, aimed at surveilling, infiltrating, discrediting, and disrupting domestic political organizations. COINTELPRO tactics included discrediting, targeting those psychological warfare, planning false reports in the media, smearing through forged letters, harassment, wrongful imprisonment, extrajudicial violence, and assassinations. Okay, it says covert operations under COINTELPRO took place between 1956 and 1971. However, the FBI has used covert operations against domestic political groups since its inception. The FBI's stated motivation at the time was protecting national security, preventing violence, and maintaining the existing social and political order. Okay, now, as I read this from Wikipedia website, I want to bring your attention to the subtle confession. All right, now, what was the subtle confession? It says, however, the FBI has used covert operations against domestic political groups since its inception. Now, keep this in mind, because it's important. And it reads, the FBI was established in 1908 as the Bureau of Investigations, BOI. Its name was changed to the Federal Bureau of Investigations, FBI, in 1935. The FBI's main goal is to protect and defend the United States, to uphold and enforce the criminal laws of the United States, and to provide leadership and criminal justice services to federal, state, municipal, and international agencies and partners. Okay, international agencies and partners. That's something else that's important to keep in mind. Now, how many of you heard of Marcus Garvey? How many of you heard of J. Edgar Hoover? How many of you heard of the J. Edgar Hoover building in Washington, D.C.? Now, I ask these questions because Wikipedia seems to want to distance the connections between Marcus Garvey and the FBI. Because it is a fact that Hoover was hired specifically to deal with Marcus Garvey way back in 1919. Now, I mention this because when I look at J. Edgar Hoover on Wikipedia, you won't find Marcus Garvey nowhere on his entire site. But yet, he was hired specifically for Marcus Garvey. The question is, what are they trying to hide? Okay? Now, before I continue, I'd like to tell people if you want to call in, the number is 347-826-9484. That's 347-826-9484. Okay. Now, I'm going to read what it says about the connection between J. Edgar Hoover and Marcus Garvey. And it reads, in a memorandum dated 11th of October, 1919, J. Edgar Hoover, Special Assistant to the Attorney General and head of the General Intelligence Division, wrote a memorandum to Special Agent Wrigley regarding Marcus Garvey. In the memo, Hoover wrote that, and it quotes, unfortunately, however, he, Garvey, has not as yet violated any federal law whereby he could be proceeded against on the grounds of being an undesirable alien from the point of view of deportation. Okay? And here is another article from PBS, Public Broadcast. And this one reads, it says, after Hoover graduated in 1917, Hoover's uncle, a judge, helped him obtain a job in the U.S. Justice Department. Within 2 years, he was selected to be U.S. Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer's special agent, special assistant. At the time of the increasing popular radicalism, Hoover quickly made his mark. He was given the responsibility of heading a new section of the Justice Department, which was established to gather evidence on radical groups. As head of the new division, he was responsible for organizing the arrest and deportation of suspected communists and radicals in the United States. Marcus Garvey soon rose to the top of Hoover's list, federal agents in collaboration with the New York City Police. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. After reading that, and I read through it pretty fast, does this sound familiar? Back in 1917, the same scenarios were going on in 1956. Okay? He was hired to look at the radical groups. The radical groups so happened to be Marcus Garvey. Okay? All right, now this is important. He began to report on Garvey's speeches as early as 1917. But as Universal Negro Improvement Association members and the circulation of the Negro World newspaper ballooned in 1919, Hoover himself targeted Garvey, referring to Garvey as a notorious Negro agitator. Now, I'm not going to get into Marcus Garvey yet. This is for later on this broadcast. I just wanted to expose the deceptions of COINTELPRO and the real reason and date it was created, okay? It was not created in 1956, but much earlier. The moment men like Marcus Garvey started to wake up, okay, Hoover was hired and put in charge of his Department of Suppression and Deportation. That's what I call it, okay? It's called the Department of Suppression and Deportation. All right. Now, listen to what the FBI says its program was for after it was exposed in 1971. All right. Many of you don't know the story. Someone broke into the FBI's office, found some files, and then they released the files to the media. And then when the files released to the media, the FBI had to come out and admit that they had this program, COINTELPRO. All right. It was exposed, okay? So, now this is what the article says. It says, and it reads, It was created, this is what they say, you know, what they admit to. They said it was created to prevent the coalition of militant black nationalist groups, prevent the rise of a black messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement, prevent black nationalist groups and leaders from gaining responsibility by discrediting them to the community. A final goal should be to prevent the long-range growth of militant black nationalist organizations, specifically among youth. Okay? Now, I want you to notice. Notice how many times they use the word black nationalist. Okay? They use the word black nationalist. All right? Now, keep this in mind. This comes from the words of the FBI COINTELPRO. This is their confession. Okay? All right, now, what's a black nationalist? All right? Now, I'm going to read what a black nationalist is. Black nationalism, BN, advocates a racial definition or redefinition of indigenous national identity as opposed to multiculturalism. There are different indigenous nationalist philosophies, but the principle of all African nationalist ideals are unity and self-determination of independence from European society. All right? Okay. Now, pay attention to these dates. All right. Here's a list of black nationalists that are listed in this article. Now, I'm going to tell you why I'm reading this, because it's important. Okay? First one, in this article, it says, as an example of black nationalists, it says Martin Delaney, all right? And this is 1812 to 1885, black nationalist, okay? Is considered to be the grandfather of African nationalism, inspired by the apparatus, success of the Haitian Revolution, the origins of African indigenous nationalism and political thought lie in the 19th century with people like Marcus Garvey, 1887-1940, Henry McNeil Turner, 1834-1915, Martin Delaney, 1812-1885, Henry Higlin Garnett, 1815-1882, Edward Wilmot Blyden, 1832-1912, Paul Coffey, 1759-1817. Okay? Now, I read that because when COINTELPRO states that they want to suppress black nationalism, they're telling you in 1956 that they started to suppress this movement way before then, because their target was black nationalism. Black nationalism started in the 1700s. All right? It's very important. It's very important. Okay? Now, the reparations of the African-American slaves to Liberia or Sierra Leone, this was a common African nationalist theme in the 19th century. Marcus Garvey, Universal Negro Improvement Association of the 1920s and 1910s and 1920s, was the most powerful black nationalist movement to date, claiming 11 million members. Okay, now I want to read that last piece for you, because Marcus Garvey got to the point where he raised 11 million members. That's powerful. Okay, it's powerful. All right. Okay, now, the COINTELPRO document was written in the 60s, right? But the black nationalist, as I said, the black nationalism, okay, it goes back to the 18th and 19th century. Ever since the Haitian Revolution of 1791 and 1804, the European ruling class had a policy of suppression and genocide. All right, we're going to see this today. All right, now this is important. Because we have to understand about how did the if the seed of Yaakov in the United States of America is spread out on the four corners of the world, what system did they develop to suppress these people? Okay? What system was developed to suppress these people? And I'm going to prove to you today that we can actually trace it back and actually look how it moved around like a snake and suppressed us, and how it still suppresses us today. Okay? Now, think about it. If this program was not exposed in 1971, they would still be killing us by stealth instead of out in the open. Think about the exposure of the drugs being pushed on the black communities. Okay? Now, this is reported by Gary Webb. This man was killed in 2004 for exposing it. All right? I'm going to play an audio file of this later to let y'all know. In case someone's been living under a rock, or in case they hit it that well, you're going to hear a testimony from Gary Webb himself. Now, have you heard of Rick Ross? Free Ray Ricky Ross. Have you heard of Rick Ross? All right. He explains how they created the crack epidemic through the CIA. Okay. Have you heard of the exposure of the Planned Parenthood eugenics project? You know, you see this in Mafia 21. All right. If we didn't expose these people, they still be doing Mafia 20. They're still doing it. Okay. Now we know about the incarceration of over a million black men and women in the United States prison system. We know about the destruction and the starvation of the Haitian people, the starvation of the Ethiopian people, the Yemen people, the Somalian people, the people of Rwanda. How about the oppression of South Africa? Okay. Now we have the latest bombing of the black Africans and the usurpation of Libya. See, all these things now out in the open. And now we can trace it back and see that they're still doing it today. You see, the exposure of COINTELPRO, this is just the tip of the iceberg. The problem with the Hebrews and other people of color is we fail to realize that we have an enemy. An enemy that is driven by the total destruction of every last one of us. Now, if this statement sounds harsh, then hang on. Hang on. After this broadcast, you will know 100% whom this enemy is and why they fear the rise of the Black Messiah. They fear the rise of the Black Messiah. Okay, now, here's a quick audio file exposing the crack in black communities. It's about 3 minutes and 17, it's about 3 minutes and 17 seconds, okay? Now, I'm going to play this, and I'm going to take a sip of water, and then I'll be right back.
His story, the most controversial of the past year. Because after investigating the origins of the crack epidemic, he claimed he found a link leading right to the CIA.
Men who were working for the CIA's army were responsible for bringing all that cocaine into Los Angeles that sparked the crack epidemic.
The CIA's army, Webb says, were the Contras, the anti-communist rebels fighting the government of Nicaragua back in the 1980s, an army founded and funded by the CIA. Webb wrote that some Contra supporters smuggled cocaine to America to raise money for their cause.
The CIA has been bringing drugs into this country.
As then CIA Director John Deutsch discovered, it's an accusation that rings true for many, especially for some in the African American community. And Webb's story has taken on a life of its own.
And Gary, this
on the talk show circuit and the internet, some have even gone beyond Webb's charges to accuse the CIA of conspiring to target young African Americans. So many
times. Was the CIA willing to poison our cities and crack with crack cocaine?
On the basis of what you learned, do you believe that there was a conscious decision, a meeting where someone sat down and said, we're going to poison the youth of black America and here's how we're going to do it?
No. No, I don't. These guys were looking to raise money, and I don't think it mattered to them where they did it.
Crack use spread like wildfire in the early 1980s. And in Los Angeles, a drug dealer known as Freeway Ricky Ross was in the middle of it. Prosecutors called Ross the Walmart of crack. He made millions in the early 80s dealing to Los Angeles street gangs. Police say he was among the first to take expensive cocaine powder and cook it into low-cost, highly addictive crack, then distribute it through the gangs. Webb says Freeway Ricky helped trigger an epidemic of human misery.
I'm a blood. No dead boy.
It destroyed our community. All the black men are in prison, most of us.
Rick Ross is now serving a life sentence for cocaine distribution.
The women are still strung on the drugs, kids without fathers, without mothers.
And honestly, how much responsibility do you have for that?
A lot. A lot of it was my fault. I played the game.
Police in Los Angeles say he virtually cornered the crack market thanks to a steady supply of cheap cocaine, a pipeline so good that Ross was able to introduce crack to other cities using his gang contacts and to make himself, he says, a very rich man.
On your best day, how much money did you see?
Couple million, two, three maybe.
On a day?
On a good day.
How many days like that were there?
A few. Quite a few.
Rick Ross's drug supplier did have connections to the Contras. Dateline has been able to confirm that from former Contra leader Eden Pastora. And Pastora admits he received some aid from that drug supplier.
Okay. So you heard it. It was a Dateline report, and this was, some time ago, because this guy, Gary Webb, he was actually shot, you know? They killed that man for exposing this. This is serious, okay? All right, now, understand, they use drugs to bring down nations. Look what they did to China, all right? Now, I'm going to read you a quote. Now, this is from a European novelist. His name is Milan Kundera, okay? Now, this will give you a peek behind the veil into the mind of the usurper, all right? This man is from, I think he's from Czech Republic, all right? And this is what he says. He says, the first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history. Then have somebody write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. Before long, that nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. The struggle of man against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting. Now, does that sound familiar? Does that sound familiar? Okay. Now, this is a quote from J. Edgar Hoover. The forces which are most anxious to weaken our internal security are not always easy to identify. Communists have been trained in deceit and secretly work toward the day when they hope to replace our American way of life with a communist dictatorship. They utilize clever camouflage movements such as peace groups and civil rights groups to achieve their sinister purpose. While they as individuals are difficult to identify, the Communist Party line is clear. Its first concern is the advancement of Soviet Russia and the godless communist cause. It is important to learn to know the enemies of the American way of life. Now, keep this in mind. Communism and capitalism are cut from the same cloth. These are tools of the elite. Okay? They're tools of the ruling elite. Just as Hoover was a tool of the elite, these were a tool of the elite. Okay? Now, here's the question. As Hoover says, the enemies? He goes, no, the enemies of American way of life. So who are the enemies of the American way of life? All right? Who are the enemies of the American way of life? Now, here is a document entitled Intelligent Activity and the Rights of Americans. Now, this is written in 1936. All right, now listen to this. It says, since the reestablishment of Federal Domestic Intelligence Program, reestablishment in 1936, there has been a steady increase in the government's capability and willingness to pry into and even disrupt the political activities and personal lives of the people. Ultimately, however, intelligent activity was directed against domestic groups advocating change in America, particularly those who most vigorously opposed the Vietnam War or sought to improve the condition of racial minorities. I'm sorry, y'all. This wasn't from 1936. This was referring to 1936. Okay, I'm going to keep going. Condition of racial minorities. Similarly, the target of intelligence investigations were broadened from groups perceived to be violent, prone to include groups of ordinary protesters. Okay? Now, notice the words racial minorities. Now, keep in mind, this was reestablished. Okay? This was a reestablishment from 1936. Now, this date, 1936, is very important because they used the same program to destroy Marcus Garvey. Okay? Starting in 1919. Now, this is way before this was this communist threat. Because we know about the communist threat. That was like, you know, the Soviet scare, right? Okay, remember World War I, World War II? When World War II brought upon the Soviet scare, the communism. This is in 1919. So what was this really used for? All right, now you got to wake up, y'all. Now, what was J. Edgar Hoover's quote? It says, it is important to learn to know the enemies of the American way of life. All right? Keep your mind on these words. Learn to know the enemies. This is what they say. You see, they considered us the enemy. They knew us completely. Okay? They know us and knew us completely. See, they know what we eat, what we like to watch on TV, what we like to listen to, what kind of soap we use, what kind of hair products we use. They know where we live. They know how many baby mamas we have. They know everything about us. And we don't even know we have an enemy. You see, we really need to wake up. Now, I'm going to read a quote out of a book called The Art of War. The reason why I need to read this book is because it is a book that is studied by the enemy, quoted by the enemy, and used by the enemy. You will see this book in the possession of controllers of Wall Street, or in the possession of those that reach extreme high positions of power. Okay? I remember when I was working a long time ago, I used to work in some office buildings, and is when I had like I wasn't actually no anyway I was working these office buildings, and I would like go around, and on all the desk I would see this book, The Art of War, and I'm like, man, this is a popular book. And I had no clue that these people actually studied this book. Now I'm going to read something from the book. Okay, it says now listen to what The Art of War says. It says, so it is said that if you know your enemy and know yourself, you can win 100 battles without a single loss. If you only know yourself but not your opponent, you may win or may lose. If you know neither yourself nor your enemy, you will always endanger yourself. Okay? Then it says, this has been interpreted and condensed into the modern proverb. If you know both yourself and your enemy, you can win numerous, literally hundreds of battles without jeopardy. So, what is this saying and how does this relate to us? Okay, how does this relate to us? You see, we as the people do not know who we are. And we don't even know we have an enemy. How can we win in this state? But if we wake up to who we are and understand that we are the seed of Yaakov and learn that the enemy is the one that gave us his religion, created the laws of bondage, gave us our leaders, controls our wealth, murders our children, enslaves our people, stole our names and our heritage. Seed of Yaakov. If we wake up to this, then we will know our enemy and know ourselves. Then we will win these hundreds of battles. Okay? We will win hundreds of battles without jeopardy. Why? Because it's the art of war. Okay? Now, I want to read that quote again from Milan Kundera. Now, listen to the quote and see if it matches someone. The first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history. Then have somebody write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. Before long, that nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. The struggle of man against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting. Now, ask yourself a question. Did this happen to someone you know? Did this scenario happen to the people of the transatlantic slave trade? Okay. Now, the million-dollar question is this. Who is the enemy? Now, I'm going to read something to you. Many of our Hebrew brothers and sisters know this verse and probably know what I'm going to read. It says, Genesis 3:15, and I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. All right? Now, let's take a look at this word, enmity. What is this word, enmity? It says, enmity, hostility, antipathy, antagonism, animosity, rancor, animus, mean deep-seated dislike or ill will. Enmity suggests positive hatred which may be open or concealed. An unbroken enmity, hostility, suggests an enmity showing itself in attacks or aggression. Hostility between the two nations, antipathy, and antagonism imply a natural or logical basis for one's hatred or dislike. Antipathy suggests repugnance, a desire to avoid or reject, and antagonism, suggesting a clash of temperament leading ready to hostility, a natural antipathy for seeking for self-seekers. Antagonism between the brothers. Animosity suggests intense ill will and vindictiveness that threatens to kindle hostility, animosity, and lead to revenge. Rancor is especially applied to bitter brooding over a wrong. Rancor filled every line of his letter. Animus adds to animosity, the implication of strong prejudice, objections devoid of personal animus. Now, that's a long definition, enmity. Has anybody really looked up that word, enmity? Now, what does it say? It says, and I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shall bruise his heel. I ask you a question. Who do we have enmity towards? We don't even know who to have enmity towards. But they know who they have enmity towards. Do you think they have enmity towards the black man? Do you see the people starving in Rwanda? Do you see them blowing the hell out of Libya? Hello? Who's the enemy? So now, once again, in whom does this seed of enmity reside? We're going to find this out today. Also, if you'd like a deeper insight, I suggest that you listen to The Seed of the Serpent and the Amalekite Deception. Use that broadcast with this one and begin to put the pieces together. Okay. The problem is that the Hebrews are the seed of Yaakov are at war. And we don't even know it. This is the problem. We are blinded for a reason. Because if we realize we are at war, then the battle would be won. Okay? That's why we're blinded. If we knew we were at war, the battle would be won. Now, I'm going to read 2 Chronicles 7:14. Now, listen to this like you never listened to it before, with new ears, knowing who you are. Okay? If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray, and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and will forgive their sin, and will heal their land. So, what is this word humble? To be proud or arrogant, to be modest, to be humble, although successful. Hebrews 3:6-6, a primitive root, properly to bend the knee, hence to humiliate, vanquish, bring down, low, into subjection, under humble, self-subdue. That's the definition of humble. You see, the battle was won. All we have to do is know who we are. And once we know who we are, we will know what to do. Call on the name of the Most High. Really simple. Now, the other side of this coin is to know who this enemy is, okay? First, we know who we are, but the other side is to know who this enemy is. I'm going to do this by giving a little insight into the systematic destruction of the seed of Yaakov and a land that is not theirs, okay? The systematic destruction of the seed of Yaakov in a land that is not theirs. Now, I'm going to read Genesis 15, and after I read it, I'm going to show you where and how in history this is fulfilled. Okay? And it reads, and when the sun was going down, and a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, a horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. By now, we should know that the Hebrews did not serve the Egyptians for 400 years. They served the Egyptians for only 130 years. Okay? I said this before. We need to wake up to this fact. They served the Hyksos for 80 years under Yosef. So we have a total of 210 years, not 400 years. Now, if this is the case, then which people on this earth were enslaved for 400 years? And it reads, and also, That nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, thou shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation thou shalt come hither again, for the iniquities of the Amorites is not yet full. Now, this iniquity of the Amorites is speaking about the Hyksos that made Joseph the ruler of Egypt. Now, how do I know this? Well, because we have to count four generations. Okay? Four generations of Abram. He says, in your Abram, your fourth generation, okay, from you to your fourth generation, this is going to happen. So, who was of the fourth generation of Abraham? Well, let's see. We have Isaac, 1. Jacob, 2. Right? Joseph, 3. Yeshua, 4. Yeshua, Joshua, right? Now, what happened? Yeshua met the Hyksos, a.k.a. Amorites, Amalekites, okay? He met them, remember? He was supposed to clean them out of the land of Canaan, which is the land of Shem. All right, now listen to this. It goes, listen to this prophecy. It says, but in the fourth generation thou shalt come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Okay, now listen to this. Deuteronomy 25:17. It says, remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way when you were coming forth out of Egypt. Okay, now, what is this referring to? Okay. This is referring to when Moses and the seed of Jacob left Egypt during the Exodus. Now keep this in mind. The Hyksos were forced out of Egypt under the new Pharaoh. He came up from the south. When Yahuwah destroyed Pharaoh and his army at the Red Sea, okay, they were easy pickings. Okay, they were ready for another round of usurpation. They were coming back. So as the Hebrews were coming out, the Amalekites were going back in. Now, when did this happen? This happened in the fourth generation of Abram. Yahshua, okay, now it should be pronounced Yahushua, but Joshua and Moses, they represented this fourth generation. If you read the book of Yasser, everything will become clear. Okay, now I will continue to read. And it says, and it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. And the same day, the Most High made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, Euphrates. Okay, now, those of you that listened to my previous broadcast, we read in the book of Jubilees that Canaan took his uncle Shem's land by sedition. Okay? So basically, Shem did not have land after this. But then Amalek came and usurped the seed of Ham. Okay? This is very important to understand. Now, I'm going to read the closing of this chapter, and it reads, and he said unto Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. Like I said before, what nation on this earth has been enslaved for the past 400 years? You see, in order for you to understand this prophecy, you have to know who the people are. If you think they are the state of Israel calling themselves Jews, then you are looking in the wrong direction. The power of the enemy is the art of deception. Okay? It's the art of deception. Now he becomes his victim. He takes their history, culture, resources, and he becomes filthy rich. Now look around who fits this description. When you see this person, or these people, that's your enemy. Know your enemy. All right, now listen to the blueprint one more time. It says, the first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history. Then have someone write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. Before long, that nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. The struggle of man against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting. Okay? Now, I advise you to read a few books that I'm going to list. And most of them you can find on my website. But for those of you that listen to this later and would like to get these books, the first one is The Invention of the Jewish People by Solomon Sand, From Babylon to Timbuktu by Rudolf Windsor, Stolen Legacy by George M. James, The Secret Relationships Between Blacks and Jews by J. and L. T. Levine, The Jewish Onslaught by Tony Martin, Chosen People from the Caucasus by Michael Bradley, Return to Glory, the Powerful Staring of the Black Man by Joel Friedman and Don Griffin, Black Wall Street by Hannibal B. Johnson. Now, you can start with these books to regain your memory and get back your power. Okay? Now, I'm going to take a quick sip. I hope everybody out there is listening to me today. Okay? It's very important that we understand this, y'all. I mean, the world is going through some serious drama right now, and the only ones that can save this planet are sleeping. Man, the stuff that is out there that we are doing is pitiful. But you know what, though? The Most High only needs a remnant. He only needs a remnant. And if you are part of that remnant, join whoanet.org. Let's communicate. Let's pray to our Father, and let's set it right. Okay, now, let me get back to this. I want to take you to the time of the 400-year captivity spoken of in Genesis 15. Okay? The purpose of this broadcast is to show who the seed of Jacob are and to expose who the enemy of Jacob is. You see, the seed of the serpent keeps his enemies close, real close, so close that he wants to become him. You see, but he can't be him while Jacob is still alive. You see, he wants to become Jacob, but he can't be Jacob while Jacob still exists. So the serpent will do whatever it takes to eliminate him. Now, I want to give a few examples in history, right, where we can see the serpent at work. Now, there's a place I'm going to start, and there's no better place to start with than Prince Hall. So who's Prince Hall? See, now it's getting interesting now. I know y'all heard of the Prince Hall Masons, but I'm going to play something for you real quick, and I want y'all to listen to this. And then I'll be right back. All right? Here it goes.
Birthplace of a branch of masonry that seeks to refute the tired old allegation that the order is only for tired old white men. We are entering a room that echoes with the history of American oppression and liberation. Prince Hall Lodge, named for a Revolutionary War soldier from Massachusetts. Founder of what remains a separate, self-segregated offshoot of the Masonic family tree. A brotherhood that has nurtured generations of Black American leaders. Prince Hall Masonry counts among its members such community and national leaders as the Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Powerful Congressman Charles Rangel and basketball star Scottie Pippen. 230 years ago, in an age when most African Americans in the North and South were still slaves, Prince Hall and 13 other free men of color were installed as masons by a white military officer. Their initiation was ratified in 1784 with a charter from the Grand Lodge of Great Britain, the colonial power Prince Paul had just fought against. Leslie A. Lewis is Grand Master of Boston's founding Prince Hall Lodge No. 1.
On July 3rd, 1776, Prince Hall started the first black lodge called African Lodge No. 1. Now, because they were a lodge under dispensation, they were not allowed to enlist or bring in new members. All they could do was march on St. John's Day and bury their dead. But as time went on, Prince Hall petitioned the Grand Lodge of England for a charter to act as a regular lodge, to bring in more members, and the charter was granted. And from that point on, it goes on and on up to this date. There are over 49 Grand Lodges in the Western Hemisphere and almost 400,000 Prince Hall Masons. So Prince Hall Masonry has thrived from that date.
The end of slavery allowed Prince Hall Masonry to spread southward, a faithful facsimile of the ancient brotherhood with the same codes and costumes, yet never fully accepted as its equal.
Knowing the history of Prince Hall as we do, Prince Hall was a man that never gave up. And I think that if Prince Hall could look at Prince Hall Masons today, he'd be pleased with what he saw.
The legacy of Prince Hall and his black brother Masons is staring down an uncertain future.
Okay, Prince Hall and his black brother Masons. Okay, now, I'm going to read what I got from Wikipedia. And it says, Prince Hall, 1735, December 7th, 1807. Keep these dates in mind. Very important. Okay, it says, Prince Hall was a tireless abolitionist and a leader of the free black community in Boston. Hall tried to gain New England's enslaved and free blacks a place in some of the most crucial spheres of society. Freemasonry, education, and the military. He is considered the founder of black Freemasonry in the United States, known today as Prince Hall Freemasonry. Hall formed the African Grand Lodge of North America. Prince Hall was unanimously elected its Grand Master and served until his death in 1807. He also lobbied tirelessly for education rights for black children, and a Back to Africa movement. Many historians regard Prince Hall as one of the more prominent African-American leaders throughout the early national period of the United States. Okay. Now, I would like you to place your mind on a statement that was read. It says, Prince Hall was unanimously elected its Grand Master and served until his death in 1807. He also lobbied tirelessly for education rights for black children and a Back to Africa movement. Now keep in mind, black Freemasonry at this time was subservient to white Freemasonry. I mean, that's pretty obvious, right? So if that's the case, what power did Prince Hall have to lobby for a Back to Africa movement? You know, that's an interesting question there. He's subservient, so what power does he have to actually lobby for this? Right? Okay, now, here's a few historical facts pertaining to Prince Hall. And it reads, Prince Hall urged the enlistment of both enslaved and free blacks for the attempt to free the American colonies from British control. Hall was concerned with the development of the colonies if they gained independence. He was certain that involvement of blacks in the construction of a new nation would be the first step towards the complete freedom for all blacks. The Massachusetts Committee of Safety declined Hall's proposal to allow blacks the opportunity to fight for the colonies. Prince Hall and supporters of his cause petitioned the committee by comparing British ruling of the colonies with the enslavement of blacks. A proclamation for from the England guaranteed blacks that if they enlisted in the British Army instead of the Continental, they would be freed at the end of the war. Only after the British Army, be freed after the war. Okay, now check this out. Now, what's going on here? Now, the British Army, they began to use blacks in their troops. You know, I say blacks, Hebrews, Negroes, you know what I'm saying, whatever you call it. They began to use us as troops, okay? Now, the colonies, the American colonies, they changed their decisions from blocking us from fighting in there because Britain was using us in there, right? Now, don't let this pass you by because it's important. It reads, it says, a proclamation from England guaranteed blacks that if they enlisted in the British Army instead of the Continental, they would be free at the end of the war. Okay? Now, did this happen? Did Great Britain or the newly formed United States of America of 1776 free the slaves? The answer? No. Okay? But notice how they both used us in their wars. So is this telling us that if Prince Hall did not inspire the slaves to fight in the war, then the United Snakes of America, would it exist? If we didn't fight in that war, would the United States of America exist? So what did the slaves do after they were lied to? Did they lobby Congress and the United States Senate? Nah. What did they do? They went back to work as slaves. As America was free from Great Britain, what did? They deceived slaves. They deceived the slaves, right? And then we remained slaves. Now, what happened? It wasn't until 13 years later, a little incident called the Haitian Uprising of 1791 to 1804, that freedom became an option. Okay. Now, has anybody heard of the Haitian Uprising? Now, it came into light when they had that earthquake. Remember the earthquake, of course, in 2010? That evangelist brought up how evil it was that this guy sacrificed a pig and it's their fault. I mean, these people are crazy, y'all. But anyway, I don't want to get off too far off topic. Now, I'm going to go over a little history because it is important for this broadcast. Now, remember, this is called The Rise of the Black Messiah. The Rise of the Black Messiah. The FBI created COINTELPRO to keep the black man under the thumb of white supremacy. Okay, now here's a little history on how we became partially free. Okay, here's a little history how we became partially free. Now, this is the Slave Trade Act of 1807. And it reads, the Slave Trade Act, citation 47 GO3, was an act of Parliament of the United Kingdom passed on 25th of March 1807, with a longer title called An Act for the Abolition of the Slave Trade. The original act is in the Parliamentary Archives. The act abolished the slave trade in the British Empire, but not slavery itself. Slavery on English soil was unsupported in English law. And the position was confirmed in Somers' case in 1772. But it remains legal in most of the British Empire until Slavery Abolishment Act of 1833. All right, now I know y'all caught that one. The act It says, the act abolished the slave trade in the British Empire, but not slavery itself. Slavery on the English soil was unsupported in English law. Interesting. Okay. Now, here's a little background, and it reads, the Committee of, for the Abolition of the Slave Trade formed in 1787. Was formed by the group of evangelical English Protestants allied with Quakers to unite in their shared opposition to slavery and the slave trade. The Quakers had long viewed slavery as immoral and a blight upon humanity. Now, this is important. If you read the history of the Religious Society of Friends, a.k.a. Quakers, you will read that they were hated in the American colonies. Okay, they were hated in the American colonies and Great Britain. But the Quakers, okay, they got into the British Parliament. And they started to push for the abolishment of slavery. Okay? Now, they had a cause to push for this. Why? Because Great Britain told the slaves, if you fight in the war, then you will be free. Okay? Now, this is how the first slaves from America and Great Britain came back to the motherland of Africa. Now, I wonder if any of y'all know this. Okay? Now, this is how they came back to the motherland of Africa. But there was a problem. Well, like Egypt, okay, like the Egyptian pharaoh, he did not want to let the people go. So when we hear about Sierra Leone and them freeing people in Sierra Leone, we have to understand that this freement was pushed by the Christian coalition at the time. And the coalition was called the Church Mission Society. They are still in existence in part, okay? Now, what did they do? They set up the Sierra Leone Company, right? And then this company became the African Institution. And guess what happened to the African Institution? It was usurped, right? It was usurped. And then this Sierra Leone Company that was used to free Africans, what did it do? It became the Sierra Leone Free Africans, a new name, and then it was used to extract its the land of Sierra Leone. So what did they extract? They extract its resources, okay, such as titanium, diamonds, cocoa, rubber, coffee, ginger, okay, and of course, they exploited the free labor. So, I wonder, if Britain and America lied to the soldiers of the War of Independence, I wonder if they lied to them. Because even after they pushed for them to be free, they said, okay, we're going to give you Sierra Leone. They give them Sierra Leone, and then all of a sudden, they're working in Sierra Leone. And the people of Sierra Leone have to give up their titanium, diamonds, cocoa, rubber, coffee, ginger, and free labor. Hello. All right, let me see how much time I got. Okay. Now, I just want to say, if this goes into overtime, I'm just going to, you know, keep going. I need to finish this part because I need to make sure I do the other parts to it. But hopefully I can finish. It might just get a little bit over. But anyway, let me get back. Now, this is very important, y'all, because you have to understand that these people have lied to us. They lied to our ancestors, okay? And they continue to lie to our ancestors. Remember, like Pharaoh did not let the people go. You think they're going to let the people go? This is modern day Egypt, y'all. This is bondage. They're not going to sign on the line to free us.
We have to be free through the Most High. Ayah. That power has to be shown through the signs and wonders. Okay? But you have to understand that you are still a slave. You're not free. You may think you're free, but you're not free. All right. Now, I'm going to read something because this is something that I think we should hear. And it's John 8:44. It says, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it." Genesis 3:15. "And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." Y'all remember what enmity means, right? You think he loved us so much to sign on the dotted line to free us? Or send us to Sierra Leone and get free labor? Think about it. Now, remember the million-dollar question. Who is the enemy? Okay. We're going to continue with the Slave Act of 1807. And it reads, "By 1807, the abolishment groups had a very sizable faction of like-minded members in the British Parliament. At their height, they controlled 35 to 40 seats, known as the Saints. The alliance was led by William Wilberforce. They often saw their personal battle against slavery as a divine ordained crusade." Think about this now. They thought to free us as a divine ordained crusade. In addition, many who were formerly neutral, that means they didn't give a damn, left or right, formerly neutral on the slavery question, were swayed to the abolitionist side from security concerns after the successful slave revolt leading to the Haitian Revolution in 1804. Did y'all hear that? I'm going to hit on it again, okay? And it reads, "In addition, many who were formerly neutral on the slave question were swayed to the abolished side from security concerns after the successful slave revolt leading to the Haitian Revolution in 1804. Okay, now let's not overlook this. Here's some dates. Civil War, 1776, no freedom. Free Slave Committee of 1787, no freedom. Haitian Revolution, 1804, freedom, 1807. Hello. Basically, so the reason why the slaves were free, not because of some moral wake-up calls or some divine thought on these Christian people, it was fear, F-E-R, fear. They were swayed to the abolishment side for security concerns after the successful slave revolt leading to the Haitian Revolution in 1804. So, all of us are free because of Haiti. Okay? We're free because of the Haitians. Now, take a look at Haiti. Look at how the Western nations, through the United Nations and the IMF, are destroying that country. Look at the famine and earthquake that killed over 200,000 people. Do you think you're looking at maybe payback by the enemy? Okay. What about this so-called freedom? Now remember that line from the Act of, Act for the Abolishment of the Slave Trade of 1807. Remember that line? It says, "The act abolishment, the slave trade in the British Empire, but not slavery itself. Slavery on English soil was unsupported in English law." Now, that's very interesting. And it reads, "Slavery was officially abolished in most of the empire on August 1st, 1834. In practical terms, however, only slaves beyond the age of six were free, as all slaves over the age of six were redesigned as apprentices. So now you weren't a slave, you were apprentice. You were free. Free to work. You were apprentice. Okay, it says, the act also included the right of compensation. Listen to this now. The act also included the right of compensation for slave owners who would be losing their property. The amount of the money to be spent on the compensation claim was set at the sum of 20 million pounds sterling. Under the term of the act, the British government raised 20 euro million to pay out in compensation for the loss of the slaves as business assets to the register owner of the free slaves. The reason why I say euro is because they have that E there. So that must be about 40 million or something. Anyway. Okay. Now, notice how we were called property. Okay. And if you were, now think about this, if you're over 6 years old, if you're over 6 years old in 1834, your ass was still a slave. That means that when the six-year-old, now think about this, when the six-year-old child, was old enough to remember that he was a slave, when he was old enough to remember that he was a slave, he was already brainwashed. Think about it. Now, as we proceed, we're going to learn the methods used to brainwash the seed of Yaakov so that they would never rise up as a people. Never rise up as a people. Okay, now, I want to make one more point. The so-called abolishment of slavery. I'm going to read something to you. Now, see if you can hear the deception taken from Wikipedia. All right? Now, it reads, between 1808 and 1860, the West African Squadron seized approximately 1,600 slave ships and freed 150,000 Africans who were aboard. Action was also taken against African leaders who refused to agree to British treaties to overthrow the trade. For example, against the usurper kings of Lagos, deposed in 1851. Anti-slavery treaties were signed with over 50 African rulers. Okay? Now, I have to, I'm actually hearing my son cry real quick. I'm going to play something for you, and I'm going to be right back because I'm going to take him into the room. But I'm just going to play, I'm going to play Martin Luther King and take a quick break, get some water, and I'll be right back. All right?
Dr. Martin Luther King.
Thank you very kindly, my very dear friends. These churches are really loaded tonight. Never in the history of this nation have so many people been arrested for the cause of freedom and human dignity. You know there are approximately 2,500 people in jail right now. Now let me say this, the thing that we are challenged to do is to keep this movement moving. There is power in unity and there's power in number. As long as we keep moving like we are moving, the power structure of Birmingham will have to give in. And we are probably nearer to a solution of this problem than we are able to realize. And don't worry about your children. They are going to be all right. Yeah. Don't hold them back if they want to go to jail. For they are doing a job for not only themselves, but for all of America and for all mankind. Somewhere we read, a little child shall lead them. Remember, there was another little child, just 12 years old, and he got involved in a discussion back in Jerusalem. As his parents moved down the dusty road, leading them back to that little village of Nazareth. And when they got back and bothered him and touched him and wanted him to move on at that moment, he said, I must be about my father's business.
All right.
These young people are about their father's business. And they are carving a tunnel of hope through the great mountain of despair. And they will bring to this nation a newness and a genuine quality and an idealism that it so desperately needs. Now we are going to see that they are treated right. Don't worry about that. The Justice Department is already in here. And they don't have some small fish from the Justice Department. They have some of the big fish in here. We are reminding them at all times that these persons are political prisoners. And there's a distinction between a political prisoner and somebody who's there for getting drunk, or somebody who's there for engaging in a robbery. And we're going to see that they are treated right. And go on and not only fill up the jails around here, but just fill up the jails all over the state of Alabama if necessary. Keep this movement going. Keep this movement rolling. In spite of the difficulties, and we're going to have a few more difficulties, keep climbing. Keep moving. If you can't fly, run. If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But by all means, keep moving.
Okay, thank you so much for your patience. I had to check my little boy. He was crying, and his mother didn't hear him, so I had to take care of that. And it was a good little break, you know. I don't want to be angry when I do these broadcasts, but you can't help but get upset when you hear, you know, when you find out the truth, you know. All right. Now, I'm going to continue. Now, I'm going to read that again. It says, between 1808 and 1860, the West African Squadron seized approximately 1,600 slave ships. And freed 150,000 Africans who were abroad. Action was taken against African leaders who refused to agree to British treaties to outlaw the trade. For example, against the usurper kings of Lagos, deposed in 1851. Anti-slavery treaties were signed with over 50 African rulers. Okay. Now, this is speaking about the effect of the 1807 Free Trade Act. Now, people read this and say, see, 50 African rulers still sold slaves until 1851. But I want you to notice the example they gave. They said, action was also taken against African leaders who refused to agree to British treaties to outlaw the trade. For example, against the usurper kings of Lagos. What does this mean? You see, basically you have to ask yourself, what is a usurper king? What is a usurper king? All right. This is talking about when the Portuguese went into Africa and usurped the kings along with Spain, okay? Portugal and Spain did this too. They went in, they usurped the kings. They usurped the kings. They basically usurped the kings of Africa, the true kings of Africa. These kings were not in control. Now, if you were a kingdom on the coast of Africa and you had slaves, do you think they could stop the Europeans from taking them? All right? Think about it now. As a notable, it says, and it reads, as a notable exception to the rest of the British Empire, the Act did not extend to any of the territories in the possession of the East Indian Company or to the island of Ceylon or the island of St. Helens. So this is telling us that it all. Now, what was going on? This was a takeover. This was the big fish eating up the little fish. Think about it. The usurper kings, okay, which were the Europeans of Spain and Portugal, they controlled the coastal kingdoms of Africa. The East Indian Company, which was the British Empire opium drug dealing operation, okay, y'all know what that is. Now, this still traded with these usurper kings. So the ones that were not a part of this inner circle were destroyed by what is called the color of law. The slave trade turned into the scramble for Africa. Now, the East Indian Trading Company was exempt from the act of the abolishment of the slave trade. Remember? They were exempt. Now, if this is the case, then who did they buy and sell slaves with? If they're exempt, then who did they buy and sell slaves with? The usurper kings. And who were the usurper kings? They were the Europeans of Spain and Portugal. And who were they really? Now, we will get into this later in the next broadcast. But okay, let's get back to Prince Hall. Okay, now, before we continue with Prince Hall, I would like to challenge you to do some research on this. It's called the Indian East Trading Company. All right, this company that was exempt from the abolishment of the slave trade. You should research an event. Now, this event is called the Bengal Famine of Bengal Famine of 1770. Okay? Now, if you do some research, you'll see the crimes of the East Indian Company. Now, what you'll see is you'll notice a pattern. Millions of people died in this. Millions of people, almost 10 million people died. Okay? Now, you'll notice that this is a blueprint. And you'll see that the Amalekites are all over this company as well. Okay? All right, now back to Prince Hall. And it says, okay, now, let me see. Now, I want to go over some brief history. And I'm going over Prince Hall's, I'm going over this history for two reasons, okay? Now, the first is to show the connections between Prince Hall, slavery, and the American Revolution. And two, to show the connections between the 400 years of slavery in Genesis 15:13 and the connection of the enemy spoken of in Genesis 3:15. Now, I'm going to read a little more about Prince Hall again, and it reads, okay, it says, Prince Hall urged the enlistment of both enslaved and free blacks for the attempt to free the American colonies from British control. Hall was concerned with the development of the colonies if they gained independence. He was certain that involvement of blacks in the construction of the new nation would be the first step towards the complete freedom for all blacks. Now, in a way, Hall was right. Because their lie backfired on them. Okay? It fired on them. If you recall, Hall, Prince Hall, was one of the first to express a desire for the Hebrews to go back to the motherland. But we have to keep in mind, Prince Hall was under the control of the British branch of Freemasonry. He was inspired by the Back to Africa movement. Okay? Now, when you read it, it explains how the American branch of Masonry did not allow him to create a lodge for black people. It was the British Empire that granted Prince Hall permission to create a lodge. Now, keep this in mind. If the Hebrews did not fight for the American, right? If the Hebrews did not fight for the Americans, then Britain would have won the war. And America would not be free. So So basically, the British Empire lost. So what we're told, because, history's always, But we're told that the British Empire lost, right? Now, the question is, why would they grant the enemy permission to create a lodge under their house? Now, three words that you should know. Art of war. Remember, enmity. Okay? Keep your enemies close. Now, you should take note that the seed of the serpent travels from the father. Okay? Remember Cain. Okay? Remember the serpent. It travels from the father. Just like the seed of Yaakov travels from the father. So, if the father is a Hebrew, the child is a Hebrew. Okay? Now, Prince Hall was the son of a slave master. And his mother was a daughter of a slave master. So here's this question. Was Prince Hall Hebrew? Was he Hebrew? Also, has Freemasonry helped our people or harmed our people? Is Freemasonry of the Most High? That's the most important question. Is Freemasonry of the Most High Allah? Is Freemasonry considered satanic? What plans did the British Empire have for Prince Hall? Keep in mind, we're dealing with the British Empire, the core, the root of Freemasonry. What was their plans for Prince Hall? You see, at this time, they were colonizing for hundreds of years. See, they knew the slaves were going to be free because of this free slave movement that was popping up in England. But they still needed the slaves. They needed that free labor because they needed to stay in power. They had to manage that empire. The fact is that they never intended to stop the slave trade. So here's the question. Are the slaves truly free? Okay, now, let me prove my point. I'm going to read you something. All right? It says, the Slavery Abolishment Act of 1833 was repealed in its entirety under the Statute Law Repeals Act of 1998. Then they say, however, this repeal has not made slavery legal again, as sections of the Slave Trade Act 1824, Slave Trade Act 1843, and Slave Trade Act 1873 are still in force. In addition, the Human Rights Act 1998 incorporates into British law Article 4 of the European Convention on Human Rights, which prohibits the holding of persons as slaves. Okay, I would advise you to research this British statute law, because the Act of 1824, 1843, and 1873, these only dealt with the suppression of slavery, okay? The suppression of slavery. And the Human Rights Act of 1998, this is worthless. It's worthless. Now, you know this because researching modern slavery all around the third world, you'll see that it's worthless. Okay? So the question is this. Why did they repeal the act in 1998? And if slavery is only suppressed, you know what I'm saying, through outdated laws, then is slavery now legal again? Okay. Well, let's see. Now, let's read this article. It says, the abolishment of slavery in much of the world has greatly reduced child slavery. The phenomenon lives on, especially in the third world countries. According to the Anti-Slavery Society, although there is no longer any state which legally recognizes or will enforce a claim by person to a right of property or another, the abolishment of slavery does not mean that it ceased to exist. Then it says, there are millions of people throughout the world, mainly children, in conditions of virtual slavery, as well as in various forms of servitude, which are in the main respects similar to slavery. It further notes that slavery, particularly child slavery, was on the rise in 2003. 2003. Okay? Now, if you think about it, the transatlantic slave trade is still happening. I'm going to speak on this later. For now, I'm going to play a quick audio file to let you listen to an example of modern-day slavery. All right? Now, this one is called Ivory Coast Chocolate. All right? Now, I want you to hear this. It's very important. Okay? Very important. All right, let me find it here. Okay, now listen to this.
In the film The Dark Side of Chocolate, we follow undercover researchers on several cocoa farms in the Ivory Coast. Through their cameras, viewers see children with machetes. We're told some are held against their will, forced to work, and that many never even get paid.
Every single time I've gone to a farm there, I've seen children. Now, some of them may be local children, some of them may be the children of the farmer, but many times they're not, and it's very hard to figure out where they come from. And one of the clues you have is that they don't necessarily speak French or the local language.
Robin Romano's film also shows disturbing signs of child trafficking. Children smuggled from Mali and Burkina Faso to work on cocoa plantations.
It's just trafficking. A child being trafficked, a child being forced to work, it doesn't get worse than that. I don't think it can't be just about, are there enough of them? It's a serious abuse.
Ivory Coast is the world's largest producer of cocoa. The U.S. State Department estimates that there are more than 100,000 children involved in the worst forms of child labor on cocoa farms throughout the country. According to an industry-wide agreement signed on September the 19th, 2001, this should not be the case. The Harkin-Engel Protocol was written to put an end to forced child labor in chocolate by 2005, a deadline that's been extended to 2008 and again to 2010.
Honestly, it's hard to see anybody saying that this protocol has attained the goals that were set out in it.
Leading companies in the cocoa market were amongst those that signed the protocol in 2001, agreeing to commit significant resources to voluntary standards.
Unfortunately, over the last 10 years, we've seen very little implementation of the actual commitments.
Chris Bayer spent 5 years in Ivory Coast in Ghana under a contract from the U.S. Department of Labor, part of Tulane University's oversight project, monitoring the protocol's action plan and studying the scope of the problem. The International Cocoa Initiative, the ICI, was set up by the protocol to bring all parties together to address the worst forms of child labor in the supply chain. In an email, they said, quote, 5 of the 6 commitments made in the protocol have been completed, and participants are actively working on the 6th commitment to improve the livelihoods of cocoa growers. Substantial funds are being expended on these activities.
The cocoa chocolate industry has spent $5.5 million between 2001 to 2009. When we did the math, we determined that they need to spend at least $75 million.
It's an industry that can certainly afford it, according to Tulane researcher Chris Bayer. From 2001 to 2011, the global revenue from cocoa products was an estimated $1 trillion.
This is about companies saying, it's our supply chain, we're accountable for the cocoa in our supply chain, we have to audit that supply chain just like we audit the books.
We're talking about a population that is already vulnerable, a population that is among the poorest in the world. And this population supplies a commodity, a primary good that creates such incredible wealth and so much pleasure and indulgence, especially in the West and among those countries that consume cocoa products. So we have this disparity between incredible poverty and suffering, and yet indulgence and decadence on the other hand.
My. Okay. Now, after listening to this audio file, the question is this. Is slavery still in existence? And what people were still enslaved? Now, have you heard of the usurper kings, like I mentioned before? Is the Ivory Coast on the coast of Africa? Did the French colonists enslave Africa? Who owns 60% of the resources in Ivory Coast? Who made part of that $1 trillion profit off of these slaves and only paid $5 million to ease the suffering of the slaves? Have you heard of Godard chocolates, Nestle chocolates, M&M chocolates, Bloomer chocolates? How about the Archer Daniels Milford Company? Okay? You see, the European and American corporations still benefit from slave trade. The IMF of the United Nations holds billions in debt. The resources of these African nations, the resources of Ivory Coast, are sold for pennies, never paying the debt off. Okay? They don't pay the debt off, and the people are sold into slavery. Okay? And this is happening. The beat goes on and on and on. Now, the question is, were we ever free, or was this the illusion of freedom? Okay? Were we ever free, or was it the illusion of freedom? All right, now, back to Prince Hall. Now, by now, your eyes should begin to see that the principalities, they're at work here, okay? The principalities are at work here. Keep in mind, all of this is working through Freemasonry and the inner circles called the bourgeoisie. The bourgeoisie. Now, we will get into the bourgeoisie later. But first, let's close on this Prince Hall, okay? Because I think y'all pretty much understand about this Freemasonry, okay? I don't want to beat it too much. Now, but understand, Prince Hall was the first black Grand Master of Freemasonry, okay? He was one-fourth black, okay? Now, I say this because even though he was, you know, one quarter black, his counterparts, they did not accept him. He had to wait until the British Empire allowed him to create a Masonry lodge. Now, here's an article that explains how his Masonic brothers treated him. Okay? His Masonic Caucasian brothers treated him. And it reads, "A problem quickly arose for a black man wishing to become Masons in the newly formed United States. The members of the lodge must agree unanimously in an anonymous vote to accept the petitioner and receive the degrees. As a consequence of anonymity requirement, if just one member of the lodge did not want black men in his lodge, his vote was enough to cause the petitioner's rejection. The sentiment can be seen in the letter of General Albert Pike to his brother in 1875, where he says, I am not inclined to meddle in the matter. I took my obligation to white man, not to niggers. When I have to accept niggers as brothers or leave Masonry, I shall leave it. Thus, although exceptions did exist, Masonic lodges and grand lodges in the United States generally excluded African Americans." So, okay, African Americans. Prince Hall fights, okay, yeah, let me see. Oh, basically, so Prince Hall fights in Civil War, all right? He basically helps the United Snakes of America. He helps them push back Great Britain. And his Masonic brothers would not accept him in the lodge. No, they won't accept any black people in the lodge but him. Now, you know, I always wondered about this point. If Albert Pike was a suspected, you know, no, he was. He was Grand Wizard of the or the creator of the Ku Klux Klan. And other KKK members, you know, fellow Masonic racists, evil rapists, murdering snakes, if they threatened to leave Masonry, if they had to accept niggas, I say niggas, as brothers, I hate even saying that word. If they accept us as brothers, if this is the case, then why would these Prince Hall Masons still honor this man, Albert Pike? You know what I'm saying? There's only one answer to that. It's called sellout. Sell us out in a minute. Okay? Anybody that's come to me saying they are Masons, man, you the enemy. You better not even tell me that. Don't even tell me that. You working for the enemy. Okay. At the start of this broadcast, I was speaking about COINTELPRO and how the FBI was spying, assassinating, and destroying any black man that wanted to advance his people. And how, in their own words, from J. Edgar Hoover, he says, prevent the coalition of militant black nationalist groups, prevent the rise of a black messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement. Okay. I'm coming to the part in the broadcast that is crucial to understand. Okay? This is crucial. Now, remember Prince Hall was one of the first to speak about the Back to Africa movement in the 1700s. Okay? Now, what if I told you that the Back to Africa movement was hijacked and used to colonize and enslave the people of Africa? What if I told you that the 13,000 African Americans sent to Liberia were used to suppress the indigenous people and the resources of that country? Would you believe me? Well, before you answer yes, let's do a little research. All right? Now, this part we really got to pay attention to. Now, I might get cut off, but I'm just going to move right on to the next part. But I got 12 minutes. I'll be able to get this part in here. Now, please keep your ears open. All right? This is very important. Very important. Okay? And if they erase this broadcast, have no fear. I am recording it, and it will be back up. And if you can't get it here, you can go to whoanet.org and get it there. And I put some securities on my website, so if y'all usurpers try to take it down, it will be right back up. Now, let me get back into this. This is from the History of Liberia, and it reads, now this is dangerous, y'all, because this is what the United States of America set up. Now, Great Britain, they had Sierra Leone as their front of a free slave movement. The United States had Liberia. Uh-oh. And it reads, Americo-Liberian domination and suppression. Now, I took this part of the article because it's telling. And it reads, the Americo-Liberians had been cut off from their African culture inheritance by the condition of slavery and were entirely acculturated to contemporary Euro-American society. Okay, now, this word acculturated means as follows. Here it says, the possession of adopting the culture traits of social patterns of another group, the adoption and assimilation of an alien culture. Okay? Now keep this in mind. The African American is a victim of warfare. All right? The purpose of this broadcast is for us to know our enemy. Now, do you recall what the blueprint said? Okay? What does the blueprint say? It says, the first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history, then have somebody write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. Before long, that nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. The struggle of man against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting. Keep in mind, okay, the purpose of signs and wonders is to deprogram the lost sheep and destroy the effects of mind control. That's the purpose of this broadcast. Now, back to the article. It reads about the American Liberians. It says, they were entirely acculturated to contemporary Euro-American society. They were of mixed African and European ancestries. That means they were mulattoes, and therefore generally lighter skinned than the indigenous blacks. Crucially, they had absorbed beliefs in the religious superiority of Protestant Christianity, the culture superiority of European civilization, and the aesthetic superiority of European skin color and hair texture. Y'all hear that? Okay? Now, think about this brainwashed fools. All right, that were allowed to settle in Africa, talking about light skin color and hair texture, aesthetic superiority of European skin color and hair texture. They wrote this, y'all. Now, let's look at this word aesthetic. Aesthetic, it says, connected with aesthetics or its principles. It says, relating to pure beauty. Rather to other considerations, aesthetic or relating to good taste, an aesthetic consideration. Now, does this sound familiar? You, black man, black woman, is your hair kinky or is it straight? Is it kinky or straight? You know what I'm saying? This determines if you were brainwashed or not. See, the blueprint is at work. It's at work. And it reads, they created a social and material facsimile. Yeah, messing that word up. They created a material exact copy of the American society in Liberia, maintaining their English-speaking, Americanized way of life and building churches and houses resembling those of the southern U.S. Okay, now, notice what they were doing and how they were acting. They're acting like the oppressor. Okay? Now, does this sound familiar? They sent a bunch of brainwashed fools over there. The American Liberians never constituted more than 5% of the population of Liberia. Yet, they controlled key resources that allowed them to dominate the local native people. And listen to this. It said they had access to the ocean, modern technical skills, literacy, and higher levels of education, and valuable relationships with many American institutions, including the American government. Now, the article right here is admitting to us that these so-called free slaves, these 13,000 mulatto brainwashed tools, were basically usurping and controlling through, what do they say? Valuable relationships with many American institutions, including the American government. Now, let me read. Now, let me see. You guys, I know you caught that, all right? One thing, did you notice in this article it says they controlled the oceans, modern technical skills, literacy, and higher levels of education? So does anybody recognize the blueprint here? Now, has anybody heard of John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman? Confessions of the Economic Hitman. Now, this was a blueprint for colonization of the indigenous people of Africa in the third world, and the creation of a new type of slave. Now, do you still think that the slave trade ended after the so-called abolishment of the slave trade? Now, how did they create this new type of slave? See, former slaves of the transatlantic slave trade, that's how they created it. Now, here's a question. How long do you think they were planning this? And was this a plan of the Freemasons? Now, remember, this is in the year 1821. Prince Hall died in 1807 when England freed the slaves. Prince Hall was speaking on a back to Africa movement in 1770s. Who was his audience? The Masons. Now remember, it was the British branch of Freemasonry that accepted Prince Hall. So the question is why? All right, now I'm going to read some scriptures before we close out. Genesis 15. Now we're going to switch, go to the other side, and advise you if you want to call in. The number is 347-826-9484. 347-826-9484. You can call in and you can listen up. And afterwards, I have time, we'll be able to communicate with each other. But I just want to get this out real quick. Now it reads, it says, Genesis 15. Know of a surety that thy seed shall be in a strange, shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. Deuteronomy 28. Now think about these fools in Liberia. Does this match them? It says, because thou servest not the Most High Yahuwah with joyfulness and with gladness of heart, for the abundance of all things, therefore shall thou serve thine enemies, which Yahuwah shall send against thee, in hunger and in thirst, and in nakedness, and in want of all things. And he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck, until he hath destroyed thee. He shall lend to thee, thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be thy head, and thou shalt be the tail. So basically, who was really in control in Liberia? Definitely not the Hebrews. Definitely not the Hebrews. Okay? Now, it says, ironically, one of the, actually, you know what? What I'm going to do is, since we have 2 minutes left, I'm going to play an audio file. And then I'm going to continue on the other side. I hope y'all can call in to continue, or you can get this in the archives. Okay? Phone number is 347-826-9484. And I want you to listen to it because I'm coming up on some very important things. And then we're going to conclude this, and then we're going to go to, I'll tell you about the next section we're going to have. All right, so let me find something to play really quick. This is going to fade out. And then we're going to continue on the other side. Let me find the file. Let me see. Oh, here we go. All right, y'all.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined to die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
It fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
little children today.
Children today.
Are they gonna suffer tomorrow?
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
Such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
We can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life.
But let's live, everybody.
Live life. For the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
You see,
let's
save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live,
but who really cares? Who's willing to try? Yeah, to save our world. Yeah, save our sweet world. Save a world that is destined to die.
Okay, y'all, welcome back. Thank you for making it to the other side. This is a very heavy broadcast for me. I was doing a lot of research on this, and I was mad, upset. I was, oh, man. I mean, you go through so many different emotions because, you know, I'm reading about the history. And, you know, it's just, man, these people are just, it's just terrible, man. And wait till you hear some files that I'm going to play a little bit later. But let me recap now. Let me put this into perspective, proper perspective. I'm talking about COINTELPRO, okay? We're talking about how it was created to suppress any black man. Now, by now, you should understand the rise of the black messiah is referring to any one of us that has the knowledge, understanding, will, determination to rise up and help our people. Now, there has always been an element that suppressed that. There's always been an element that suppressed that. Okay? Now, way back in the 1700s, we've seen it being usurped and hijacked by the Freemasons. COINTELPRO was not something that was created in the 50s, because obviously it was used on Marcus Garvey in 1919. So they're trying to be deceptive with us, deceptive about that. And like I said, they exposed COINTELPRO, but yet we still have the crack in the neighborhood through the CIA. We have the brothers in the prison systems. You know what I'm saying? We got slavery still going on. They didn't get rid of it. They were like, okay, we exposed. Oh, well. Still, May Alpha 21. Millions killed in abortion clinics. You know? So now what I'm doing is I'm trying to show people that you are the seed of Jacob and you are being destroyed. The enemy does not like you. And there's a system that he is doing. All right. Now, as an example, I'm showing you Sierra Leone that was set up by Great Britain. And now Liberia that's set up by the United States of America. In the article that I was reading, it was showing you how the the usurped slaves, the brainwashed ones, they made sure they got the mulatto ones because they made sure they can trust them. Ain't nothing wrong with mulatto people now. And let me say that. They know what time it is. I'm just saying that at this time, they were using mulattoes probably because they feel, oh, we can control them better, which they probably did. They probably filled their heads with all this stuff. But now we have a situation here where they're being used to suppress the indigenous people, their own people, because many of the slaves came from Sierra Leone, Ghana, Ivory Coast to coastal cities. All right, now take a map and look at where Liberia and Sierra Leone are. Okay, if you don't know, take a map and look at these places. All right, now let me continue with what it says. It says, ironically, one aspect of American society is that the Americo-Liberians recreated was a culture and racial caste system. However, in this caste, with themselves at the top instead of the bottom. At the top instead of the bottom. He shall lead. And what it say? He shall lend to thee, thou shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, thou shall be the tail. Now, how are these slaves creating themselves at the top and not the bottom? Okay, think about it now. And it reads, to them, their society must have seemed radically different from the United States because it rejects the ambiguity, I can't read that word, Western belief in immutable racial hierarchy. Ambiguity, sorry about that. And he goes, which had led the colonialists to despair of life, to a despair of life in the U.S. They, on the other hand, believed in racial equality and therefore in the political and the potential of all people to become civilized through evangelization and education. Like many white missionaries before and after them, they were frustrated by the natives' lack of interest in becoming civilized. I mean, come on, y'all. Let me read that again. They, on the other hand, believe in racial equality and therefore in the potential of all people to become civilized through evangelization and education. Like many white missionaries before and after them, they were frustrated by the natives' lack of interest in becoming civilized. Okay, now, first of all, you know the mind of the racist usurper wrote this deceptive-ass article. Are we supposed to believe that those useful tools in Liberia were governing themselves? Okay. Now, the slave masters of America and Great Britain were doing it because they're acting like they had nothing to do with it. Now, keep in mind, this article says they valued relationships with many American institutions, including the American government. Okay? Now, as it reads, it says, some local people assimilated into American Liberian society, often by marriage. Some entire coastal tribes became Protestants and learned English. But most indigenous Africans kept to their traditional language and religion. Before long, the Americo-Liberian ruling elite was living rather prosperously, sending their children to America for often racial segregated high school and college education, and keeping the indigenous people excluded from all political and economic leadership. Okay, now, keep this in mind. This is the year 1821 to 1865. Now, at this time, it was still illegal for slaves to read. So we have to ask the question, what type of universities were these Americanized usurped tools going to? Now, we're going to hit on this later in other broadcasts, another time. Okay, it's very important. Because this is going to give insight on who is really in control here. Okay? Now, so what's really going on here? You see, right before your eyes, they are rewriting history. African Americans did not control Liberia. We did not control the politics of Liberia. This was the blueprint for colonization of European into the continent of Africa. Think about it. Behind every idol is a demon. And behind every black face in a position of power is white power, a.k.a. white supremacy. Case in point. Okay, Liberia. Now, here's another point I want to make. Okay? Now, this is where you got to put your ears on and really listen in. Now, I'm going to play some files from the Congo. Okay? And I'm going to make a few comments after it. Now, this is pretty messed up. But I want you to hear this because this is the history of the Congo, which many people, you know, I didn't know about until I started doing this research recently. Okay, now this is called Genocide, Leopold II, and it's 4 minutes and 48 seconds long, all right? And I'm going to play it right now, and here we go. Okay.
The humiliation and violence inflicted on black Americans was mirrored in Africa. At the end of the 19th century, as Europe's powers scrambled for control of the continent's riches, the rights of the indigenous peoples were no impediment to their plans for conquest.
The attitude of white people in all Europe was tabula rasa, terra incognita. Here is a place which is a sort of no man's land. And in other words, we can create our own states there and we're going to bring order and civilize them. Always the word civilized was used. Whatever you were actually doing, whether you were shooting them, you were civilizing them. The vast majority of people thought they would need, at best, a paternalistic a treatment that they would need looking after, like children.
After the Conference of Berlin in 1885, Europeans embarked on a continent-wide land grab. In less than 20 years, 90% of African territory would be placed under European colonial rule. One of the main beneficiaries was King Leopold II of Belgium. Aware of the vast fortune to be made, he persuaded Europe's powers to recognize his sovereignty over one of Africa's largest regions, the Congo.
Here was this man who became King of Belgium in 1865 at the age of 30. Enormously shrewd, enormously greedy, enormously ambitious, and with an absolutely brilliant sense of public relations. He hired the explorer, Henry Morton Stanley, the man who found Livingston, to go to the Congo and essentially stake out this huge territory for him. Leopold got first the United States and then all the major nations of Western Europe to ratify his seizure of this enormous territory in the center of the continent.
First, Leopold created a smokescreen, claiming that he wished to educate a savage people.
They were all really fooled by Leopold because they took him at his word. They thought he was a sort of a man who's going to lose all his money in this crazy philanthropic venture. But they didn't realize what he was really after at all, which was to make himself hugely rich by exploiting brown hands and broad backs who were going to carry the wealth of Africa and load it on ships for his own personal profit.
Bring them!
Extreme violence was employed to impose Leopold's dominion. The right hands of those who failed to meet rubber quotas were severed. Even young children were not spared. In 1896, a German newspaper reported that 1,308 hands had been gathered in one day. Leopold created a 90,000-strong army to enforce his rule. One of his lieutenants wrote, "Only the whip can civilize the black."
They would go into village after village. The army would seize the women of the village and hold them hostage in order to force the men of each village to go into the forest and gather a monthly quota of wild rubber. And they did this for about 20 years. And you can just very easily imagine, if you have a village where the women are all being held hostage, the men are all in the forest as forced laborers for several weeks out of each month, there's nobody to plant and harvest food, to go hunting, to go fishing, to do all the normal things through which a community feeds itself. So from all of these causes, starvation, being worked to death, and most of all from the disease that hit this famine-ridden population, the best estimates are that between 1880, when King Leopold first got his hands on the Congo, and 1920, that in that 40-year period, the population was slashed from about 20 million at the beginning of that period to around 10 million at the end. So an enormous loss of human life.
Okay. Now, I want to make a few points here. Did you hear that they had 10 million people that died? All right? This happened, and yet they're not calling it a genocide. That word genocide didn't even start yet, right? Now, when you do research on Leopold II, you find out that he's related to Queen Victoria. Okay? Now, you also find that the Merovingians are in that line, and also Charlemagne. Okay? Now, why I bring this up is because when you trace this back, it goes back to the Germanic tribes. Now, the top deity of the Germanic tribe was called Wotan. He's associated with Mercury. Mercury is the god of trade. All right? And Mercury carried the staff and the serpent around it. Okay? The symbol of the serpent and the snake. So basically, we have to ask the question is, who really was Leopold II? Okay? And the question is, were these slaves sacrifices for his god, to the god Mercury? Now, this is something to think about. There was 10 million souls that died. 10 million people died. This was the god of trade. You know what I'm saying? They said, if you want to be wealthy, this is what you have to do. Now, you always have to think about the principalities now. Okay? All right. Now, I'm going to play another one. And this one is called Genocide Racism. Now, this is really important to hear this. Okay? And then I'm going to continue. It is, all right, really quick. Here we go. This is 1 minute and 41 seconds.
The forced labor system did not come to an end because it was so profitable. The new Belgian Congo continued it more or less until the early 1920s. At that point, the Belgian colonial officials realized that their population was shrinking so rapidly from the effects of the forced labor system that they had to modify it. They had to make it less lethal, or otherwise they would have no labor force left.
Although 10 million people died, the Congolese genocide has largely been forgotten in Europe. In the book The Heart of Darkness, the author Joseph Conrad, who witnessed the violence in the Congo, writes, "The conquest of the earth, which mostly means taking it away from those who have a different complexion or slightly flatter noses than ourselves, is not a pretty thing when you look into it too much." It was only at the end of the Second World War, when newsreels documented the Nazis' extermination of 6 million Jews, that the words genocide, Holocaust, and even racism passed into common usage.
Whatever the origins of the word racism, that is when it was first coined, there's no doubt that it was first used to think about Nazi treatment of Jewish people. That was the case that gave the word racism its modern shape and meaning, in fact, brought it into use as a word, and also, therefore, brought it into use in a context where it was unequivocally clear that it was a very bad thing.
Very bad thing. Now, I wanted to play that last part because it's important. Now, notice how the Europeans were forced to mention the word genocide, Holocaust and racism after the Jews were killed by Hitler. Okay? So now they had to admit, okay, it was a genocide, Holocaust, and racism that they did. Okay? They had to admit it. They did it to us. Now they have to make that connection. Now what happens? What did they do when they finally said, okay, this is a Holocaust? Now, what did they do for the Jews? They gave them reparations to the amount of about $80 billion. They gave them land, right? And they gave them the positions of power in nearly every, damn near every government on this earth. Okay. Now, what did the slaves get when they admitted that genocide, Holocaust, and racism is a bad thing? The slaves, what do we get? We got the IMF. We got stolen resources. We got apartheid, starvation, discrimination, murder, more genocide, and forced labor. Forced labor of our children. Still. Okay? So, who's in control? Were we free? Who's the enemy? All right? Okay, now, here's something from the not-so-distant past, and I'm going to read this to you, and we're going to see the system of the serpent and how they were used to suppress the rise of the Black Messiah, okay? Because remember, the Black Messiah is a definition for anybody that is trying to bring us up, right? And it reads, now, Patrick Emery Lumumba, July 1926 to January 1961, was a Congolese independent leader and a first legal elected prime minister of the Republic of Congo after he helped win its independence from Belgium in June 1960. Only 10 weeks later, Lumumba's government was deposed in a coup during the Congo crisis. He was subsequently imprisoned, executed by firing squad, an act that many believe was committed with the assistance of the government of the United States of America. So the Congolese tries to free themselves from the European rulers. They elect someone to lead them out of darkness, out of the dark ages, and what happens? Assassinated by the CIA. Now, when we hear weak-minded, ignorant white folks saying black people cannot govern themselves, ask themselves this question. Do you know your history? Okay? Now, Patrice Emery Lumumba was an example of the rise of the Black Messiah. He was murdered by the principalities, the seed of the serpent. Keep in mind, if you have one powerful and free independent African nations to look towards as an example, then all of us will be free. Therefore, if some of us are still enslaved, all of us are still enslaved. Okay, now, before I get too angry at the white man, okay, we have to acknowledge that not all white people are clueless. Many of them stood by us and are fighting like hell for the cause of freedom. Case in point, John Perkins. He's one of them. And we also have to look at a man by the name of Doug Hemmelfeder. Now, many don't know who this man is, so I'm going to give a brief introduction, okay? He was the second Security General of the United Nations. I know about him because I live here in Sweden. They got parks and monuments to honor him, okay? Now, I'm going to read a brief article concerning Doug Hemmelfeder. And it says, in September 1961, Doug Hemmelfeder learned about the fighting between noncombatants, UN forces, and Kantagese troops of Musse Tasumbi. He was en route to negotiate a ceasefire on the night of 17th, 18th of September when his Douglas DC-6 airline SEBDY crashed near Nubla, northern Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, Zambia. Hammerfell and 15 others perished in the crash. A special report issued by the United Nations following the crash stated that a bright flash in the sky was seen at approximately 1 a.m. the previous night. According to UN special report, it was this information that resulted in the intention of search and rescue operations. Initially indicating that the crash might not have been an accident led to multiple official inquiries and persistent speculation that the security general was assassinated. Okay? So, the question remains, why did they kill him? Now, we are told that Doug Hammerfell and Patrice Lumumba did not like each other. Yet, both of them died for the same cause. Now, this all was done during the Cold War era. Okay? And now it reads, it says, at the time of the, Doug Hammerfell's death, Western intelligence agencies were actively involved in the political situation in the Congo, which culminated in the Belgium-American support for the succession of Katanga and the assassination of former Prime Minister Patrick Lumumba. Belgium and the United Kingdom had a vast interest in maintaining their control over much of the country's copper industry during the Congolese transition from the colonialism to independent concerns about the nationalization of the copper industry. Could have been provided a financial incentive to remove either Lumumba or Hammerfell. Belgium has since publicly acknowledged and apologized for its negligence in the death of Lumumba. See, they're even admitted to it. Then give Congo back. If you're going to admit to it, it's a damn shame. Now, basically, Katanga has cobalt, copper, tin, radon, uranium, and diamonds. Okay, so, you know, that's what they're fighting for. It's basically the resources. Okay? Now, listen to this, all right? Now, this is going to tell you something. In his speech to the 64th session of the United Nations General Assembly on 23rd September 2009, Colonel Gaddafi called upon the Libyan president of UNGA, Ali Traki, to institute a United Nations investigation into the assassination of Congolese Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba, who was overthrown in 1960, and murdered the following year, and of UN Security General Doug Hammerfell in 1961. See, Colonel Gaddafi, right? I'm saying now we see this man, Colonel Gaddafi, being hunted down, and his country being looted by the same Western powers. Okay, and what was Gaddafi doing? He was investing in Africa. He was apologizing for the slave trade on the behalf of the Arabs. He was calling for unity between the African nations to Africa. Okay, he said, Africa, say, become a powerful independent nation. Okay, he was doing this. And what happened to Gaddafi? He was attacked by NATO and the United States. See, it's the same old story. White supremacy prevails once again. So the question is, are we free? They're bombing Gaddafi right now. Are we free? Now, understand this fact. Whom they do not control, they destroy. Brothers and sisters, Liberia was nothing more than the first case of blackface on white power. Okay? Now, I'm going to read something to you to bring it home. Now, this is the political structure of the so-called Free American Enslaved in Liberia movement. All right, now, here it says, and it reads, the True Whig Party, also known as the Liberian Whig Party, is the oldest political party in Liberia. Founded in 1869, the party dominated Liberian politics from 1879 until 1980. Damn! Almost 100 years. To the extent that the country was virtually a one-party state, although opposition parties were never outlawed, initially its ideology was heavily influenced by that of the United States Whig Party. In mind, the United States Whig Party is also called the Republican Party. You know that party that just loves black folks? The Republican Party? And it reads, the political party was founded in the township of Clay Ashland in 1869. Now listen up, this is very important. It presided over a society where only black American settlers and their independents were were citizens able to vote, and so represented them often working in tandem with the Masonic order. Let me read that again. It provided over a society where only black American settlers and their descendants were citizens able to vote, and so represented them, often working in tandem with who? The Masonic Order. They admit to it right there, who's in control. Okay? Now, so basically, for those of you that still think the African, black African, the former slaves, were still free in Liberia, I advise you to think about the Masonic Order. Okay? Now, I know you heard them say working in tandem with the Masonic Order. Okay? Now, they're basically just telling you that the serpents are in control. All right? The Masonic Order is working with the slaves in Liberia. Hello? Okay, so what about this Masonic Order? And it reads, now this is from the same article. It says, the Masonic Order of Liberia was formed based on principles of Freemasonry, which had been gleaned by former slaves from their masters in the United States prior to their being returned to Africa under the auspice of the American Colonization Society. The former slaves' knowledge of Freemasonry had to have been gained covertly, as they were not eligible for administration to the organization and its rituals were not open to outsiders. Neither black American Masons nor their Liberian counterparts would have been officially regarded as being Masons by members of the parent group. Okay? So now, we see who really was in control of the Back to Africa movement of 1821. All right? Now, let's read about the American Colonization Society. Okay? The American Colonization Society. Remember, they work with these people. And it reads, critics have said that the ACS was a racist society, while others point to its benevolent origins and later takeover by men with visions of an American empire in Africa. The society closely controlled the development of Liberia until its declaration of independence by 1867. The ACS had assisted in the movement of more than 13,000 Americans to Liberia from 1825 to 1919. It published a journal, the African Repository and Colonial Journal. After that, the society had essentially ended, but did not formally dissolve until what date? 1964, when it transferred its papers to the Library of Congress. So basically, these people controlled Liberia from the 1820s until 1964. The ACS. All right, so when Wikipedia says that, I quote, ironically, one aspect of American society that the Americo-Liberians recreated was a culture and racial caste system. When they say, ironically, one aspect of the American society that the Americo-Liberians recreated was a culture and racial caste system. Okay? Now, what Wikipedia should have said was this. It was the American Colonization Society, the racist Whig Party, and the Freemasons that recreated a culture and racial caste system. Okay? Because they were in control. They did this. Now, if they created Liberia for free slaves, and Sierra Leone for free slaves, and usurped them, then what happened to the free slave movement? They already took that over. Now, Yochanan 8:44. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and a father of it. Okay? Ephesians 6:11. Put on the whole armor of Allah, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the serpent. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rules of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of Allah, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness. Okay. I wanted to read that to remind you that we have the victory. This broadcast is to deprogram the lost sheep and document the crimes of the usurper. Serpent. Okay, now I'm going to read you a few details concerning the True Whig Party of Liberia. And then I'm going to open up the phone lines and take some calls if people want to talk, because we got like about 20 minutes. And this is just going to seal this Liberian deception, okay? Now, this is the True Whig Party. Remember, there was the Colonialization Party, the True Whig Party, and the Masonic Order. And they all basically work together, okay? Now, it reads about the True Whig Party. It says, the party endorsed systems of forced labor in 1930. They sold human labor to Spanish colonialists on Fernando Po, now Bioku in Ecuador, Guinea. And this is in 1930. They were still selling labor, y'all. 1930, and they were supposed to be free in 1865. All right. And this is the True Whig Party, the Republican Party. Okay. Leading to a five-year U.S. and British boycott on Liberia. Now, that's contradictory, right? They're selling, but yet they're boycotting. The party was selling, but U.S. and Britain's boycotting. But listen, it says, despite this, the West saw them as an establishing, unthreatening force, and so invested heavily in the nation under William Tubman's leadership from 1944 to 1977. Okay, so they condemned with one hand of the trade of the free labor, right? But with the other hand, they condoned it. Kind of like, you know, this $1 trillion chocolate industry of the Ivory Coast. You know what I'm saying? They're saying we're going to sign a treaty, and I mean, to free these people, but yet they let it go on from the time they found out to even today. And at the same time, making trillions of dollars. Okay? Now, this is telling, because this is going to close this out, and it says, now, what about this guy? This is what I'm going to say. This guy named William Tubman. Who is he? Okay. Remember, they said that. They said leading to the five-year ban. Despite this dispute, the West saw them as a stabilizing, unthreatened force, and so invested heavily in the nation under William Tubman's leadership. Now it says, now, who is William Tubman? It says Tubman was another, he was basically the leader of Liberia at the time, installed leader, okay? He was basically another installed puppet. This man was the classic case of blackface on white power, like Barack Obama. See, he ruled for almost 30 years as a dictator. He died in office and was succeeded by his vice president until 1980. Now, what happened in 1980? Now, this is very interesting. Those that know Liberia, okay, this is the place where, you know, we're supposed to have. See, in 1980, the vice president was overthrown by a man by the name of Samuel Kanyando. Okay? Samuel Doe. He was assassinated in 1990, 10 years later. Now, take note. Who's Samuel Doe? Samuel Kenyon Doe was the first indigenous head of state in Liberian history. This man was an indigenous Liberian. Just like that, Patrice Lumumba in Congo, he was a Congolese that became president and killed. This guy became president of his country and was assassinated. See, he was elected by the people. The people loved him. He went there and he was going to change the Constitution. But he was killed by the CIA just after 5 years of being in power. Okay? Then after he was removed, guess who they put in power? A man by the name of Charles Taylor. See? Blackface on white power. Blackface on white supremacy. Samuel Dole, Patrick Lumumba, both of them were victims of the rise of the Black Messiah. Okay? This is Victims of the Rise of, it's called Operation Foot on Nigga's Neck. That's what they should call it. Operation Foot on Nigga's Neck. Because whenever we try to get ahead, they kill us. Now, if you still believe that Back to Africa movement was nothing more, if you still believe that the Back to Africa movement was nothing more than a Masonic joke on us, let me read something to you. Deuteronomy 28:43. The stranger that is within thee shall go up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. So the question is this. Was the African slaves in Liberia in control, or was it the demonic Masonic slave master? Deuteronomy 28:44. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. You see, the illusion was created for the slave to be in control. But as you can see, behind the scenes, in every case, the system of Anglo-Saxon white supremacy is controlling every move. It's the blueprint, the oldest trick in the book, and it's still being used today. All right, now, for part two, we're going to explore how the serpent controlled the education of the African slave, and we're going to explore further whom the serpent truly is. All right? Now, with this, I'm going to close with reading the Negro Act of 1740, and it reads, Negro Act of 1740, The Comprehensive Negro Act of 1740, passed in South Carolina, made it illegal for slaves to move abroad, assemble in groups, raise food, earn money, and learn to read English. Additionally, owners were permitted to kill rebellious slaves if necessary. And after reading that, we actually worry about the mark of the beast. Hello? Now, we are going through hell and went through hell for centuries. We ain't got to worry about no mark of the beast. We need to wake up, Hebrews. Now, if we got about 16 minutes left, if somebody would like to call in, please raise your hand and I will answer your call, or I will close out and close this. Actually, let me see if somebody's on here. I got a caller. Hold on 1 second. Caller 241. 419241.
Oh, that's me. Okay. Shalom. Shabbat shalom, brother Dawid. Sister Georgia.
Hey, Sister Georgia. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I wanted to tell you, excellent show, great information. I tell you what, you was on it because as I was listening to your broadcast earlier, your volume completely went out. And I had a really hard time getting back onto the show to listen.
Okay.
And I know when things like that happen, the way it happened wasn't like normal. And I just want to thank you for bringing forth this information, because all information to our people is necessary. A lot of the times we don't look at, like, the information you brought out, because I'll be honest, I'm a little lost myself, but I understood what you were saying basically overall. And my question was, do you believe, I know you mentioned about, I think in 1998, I think you said, it might have been, I don't know, real recent, you said something about slavery is just suppressed. because of they, in 1998, they refute something with the British. But my question is, a lot of people are speculating on this anyhow. We know that we were always considered three-fifths human by the seed of the serpent. My question is, do you believe that one of the things that might take place is putting us back into captivity? Do you think they're going to I really don't think they're going to try to push for that, but I'm just curious. What are your thoughts?
Well, it would never work with us because, you know, we would resist it too much, but it would work with our children because they would just have to, you know, just say this is a law. And then when you grow up in ignorance, you continue to do ignorant things. So we would be like, oh, hell no. We fight like hell. But do I think so? Well, they got it on the law. They got it on the books. And think about this. The third world cannot resist slavery anyway. You know what I'm saying? They got millions of people enslaved. They got the whole island of Ivory Coast, the whole country of Ivory Coast is basically working for free with this daggone cocoa. So, you know what I'm saying? It's not like they can't do it.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense because of the fact that when we look at what Hitler was trying to do, and we know what Obama is after the youth, because they, just like I did a show where I was talking about those first batch of Hebrew slaves that came over, they had to break it. That's where you get into the Whittle and Litch. They had to break those because you can't take a people who have not been in such a condition and broken down state and think you're just going to rule over them. You got to break that out of them. And then you have this young generation where you can just tell them anything. They'll believe whatever you say because they know no better. So, yeah, I can see that possibly being a scenario. I was just curious on your thoughts on that one.
And, but you know something else, Sister Georgia? And I'll call her 870-588. 1 second. I'm going to get to you. In my next broadcast, the next part of this, because it's going to be three parts, I'm actually going to get into the Willie Lynch, and I'm going to show you that there was actually a lot of rebellions, and these rebellions, they kept twisting the screws tighter and tighter and tighter, and it actually led to a lot of things that we see today. But this is a really deep study, but we have to really understand our history, because if we don't, we're going to repeat it. And we have to know who we are. We really have to know who we are. You got to know this enemy.
That's right. Thank you.
You're welcome, sister. 870-588, you have a question?
Hey, it's Jeanette.
Hello.
I just wanted to state, it's Bumblebee Wings.
Excuse me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I just wanted to make the comment about the things that I am revealing from the mystery schools putting on our site. It is from their studies, and it's so brainwashing and scary and lies, and you can tell when you read it with the Father over you guiding you, you can see the lies unfold in their words, but yes, this is how they have brainwashed society by using all these techniques, and it's deep. But
yes.
I just want, when I put it on there, when you read it knowing this is Satan's words.
Yeah.
And you can just see how this information unfolds in all these mystery groups.
Yeah, and I agree with you, because we have to understand that, okay, just like the protocols of Learn Elders of Zion, they have a blueprint on how to control people. If you notice that the Liberian Sierra Leone, Prince Hall, this is all done through the Freemasonry, right? So,
and this is what they've done, working through the blood and fixing it where they can brainwash people through the chemicals in the air because of what our blood accepts, and why they did away with your pure Hebrew blood, or tried to do away with your pure Hebrew blood. But they put it in these studies, like what they're doing is for the good of humanity. But actually what they're doing, and you can see it in there, the Spirit will show you that what they've done is this intermarriage and mixing of the blood was to destroy God's people, so
yeah.
God's people wouldn't have the memory of being God's people.
True. But,
and,
but I understand.
And all of this unfolds. I've had these studies for 35, 40 years.
Wow.
I've never, you know, I walked with God from as far time as I can remember as far as communicating and talking to Him, which I don't like to call Him God hardly anymore, but the Father, the Creator. Well, when I got into these studies, wanting to get closer to God, I didn't have Jesus in my life, but I was interested in the mysteries and astrology and numerology and da-da-da-da back in the 70s in my early 20s. Well, I continued to pay for them and get them, but then I continued to live my life, however, and I didn't get really into them. Well, I got up to the second degree. The first degree, there's 20-something studies, and the second degree, I think there's 20-something studies. Well, then I quit purchasing them, I guess, back in the 80s, maybe. There was portions of it I kept trying to keep in my life, but the Father kept me protected from opening that third eye or from doing those meditations or from doing those. There was always this thing over me that I just couldn't carry this stuff all the way. Well, now I know why. And every time I had in the past tried to get into and look at them, I feel like, you know, I'm not supposed to get into the book of good and evil. God said stay away from it in the garden. Well, so, and it would scare me and I'd stay away from it. Well, now it's His Spirit that is up on me that gets into these books and is doing this. And so I don't have no fear of it. And the falseness of it unfolds to me, so it's just a blessing that I have these and able to present them.
Sister Jeanette, right?
Yes.
You know what? And that's good, because now you have a protection and you can read it and look at it for research purposes and protection rather than
exactly.
trying to come
exactly.
up. But sister, one second. I have another caller that I want to bring in.
But
we have about
I'm worried
seven...
about how much I should put on there, because I don't want people to get snagged by this. Because it's freaking drawing it, but I have to feel like the Father's going to protect the people that read it.
Well, you know, if
that He's going to show them what He's showing me.
If it's something that you feel that's too much, just give a reference and say you can read it here. But if it's something, you know what I mean? Most people aren't. There's people at our different
if it's
levels.
Something too deep, I'm just going to send it to you in Georgia.
Okay. All right, you can do that.
You know, and then let y'all decipher it if what you want to do with it.
Okay, but sister, I have to. I have one more call. I want to let them let them say something really quick. But thank you so much, sister.
Okay.
Caller 856-676. You have a question?
Hey, shalom, brother. Where is Jamel?
Hey, Jamel. What's up, my brother?
How's it going, bro?
It's going good.
I think that your show today, from what I caught, it's excellent. You know what I mean? I think it's right on point. I think people definitely need to hear this. I also like to add that we don't have to go as far as Africa to still see that slavery still exists today.
Yeah, I know that.
You know, when we talk about slavery, we talk about forced free labor. And when you look at the middle class, we're going to just focus on middle class and down. A lot of us still don't have anything to show for. We go to work, we come home, we pay forced bills, our land, you know, we may actually own the house. We never own the land. So when it's over and done with, we work to get something in order to get it right back. So that's a form of forced slavery also. If you want to look at all the prisons, a lot of prisons now are privately owned, and these owners actually get, I think it's somewhere around estimated 30,000 to 40,000 hours per head that's locked up. based off of forced labor that they actually go through. So this is something that I think that Occupy Wall Street, I think that this is what they're arguing about, even though I don't think they completely understand how deep everything goes. They're just fighting about the surface thing that they actually see. But it goes very deep. It goes even as deep as what we're talking about today.
Yep. And the thing is, Joe, I got like about 4 minutes left. So I'm going to first say thank you, everybody, for coming. I'm going to play a song. Jamel, if you want, could we talk offline?
Definitely, definitely.
Okay.
I'm going to try to get up with you through my phone. I'm having a problem with the internet.
Okay, yeah, it's like my internet tried to cut out a couple times. I'm not even sure if I'll be able to record this tonight. If not, I'll make another one. But anyway, call our number 804-289. I'm sorry, we only have 4 minutes. Actually, if you have a quick question, call our 804-289. Do you have a quick question?
Thank you very much, y'all. Yes, I'd like for you to kind of find out who is back in this can kit, you know, that's running for president. And I'm trying. I can't find none yet, but I'm not going to give up.
Well, so, let's say look under the Central Reserve Bank, because you talking about Herb Cain? He's under Central Reserve Bank. And if he worked for them, ain't nothing but the usurper, brother, and the Amalekite. But, brother, I got 3 minutes. I'm going to play something on the way out. I want to thank the Most High for giving us this opportunity to come together. I pray that this message goes to the four corners and wake up those Hebrews that are still in bondage. All right, y'all, I'll talk to you on the other side.
Hey.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Moses, lay your rod in that Red Sea. Lay your rod, let the children cross in that Red Sea. Pharaoh hosts God knows. Moses,